you listened last week, and I hope you did, you heard the first part of my visit with Pete Wernick of Hot Rise, Dr. Banjo himself. We got into depth about the new release from Hot Rise 40th Anniversary Bash CD, all recorded live, right there in Boulder, Colorado. Pete has explained that it was three nights of recordings, and they just took the best of the three nights with all kinds of special guests. You're going to enjoy that. Throughout the program, we'll hear several cuts from the live 40th Anniversary Bash of the, I think, certainly famous Hot Rise band. Pete, I'm talking to Pete Wernick, for people who are just tuning in. Pete, the Hot Rise 40th, it's everything anybody would want from Hot Rise. It's a wonderful recording, and I just have this question for you, too. Are you still having fun?
No, it's pure hell, Steve. The only reason I'm doing it is because I'm making so much money. So, I hope people caught the irony there, because in bluegrass, you know, how do you make $1 million in bluegrass? Well, you start with $2 million.
That's right.
Yeah. But actually, we are doing well. Our management and agent does the best they can for us, and so we actually get to have individual hotel rooms, which is pretty different from the first few years of the band, where I did the booking. And my second question, or my first question after they said, yes, we'll have Hot Rise, my next question would be, whose house can we stay at? And that meant sleeping on the floor quite a bit. And we graduated to no floors the following year. And then we graduated to no couches in rooms that people walk through. And then we actually went to the room we stay in has to have a door on it.
It's called Vegas.
And then we went to sharing motel rooms, which was like a luxury, but now we're all the way up to having our own individual rooms.
See, there's your chart. That you should put that in your next one year. You have all these publications and things available for teaching. You should put that. This will be your goal as you start a band, a part of your band teaching. This can be your steps, and you want to get to this step.
I do have a book that's been out of print for a while, but I still have copies left. It can be found and ordered on drbanjo.com, and it's called How to Make a Band Work. And it doesn't talk hardly at all about what happens on stage. It's all about organizing and how to make decisions and how to get gigs and how to, you know, deal with record companies and all kinds of stuff. It's very dated because I wrote almost all of it in 1990 when the band was just about done as a full-time band, but a lot of people asked me back then, how does Hot Rise do this? How does Hot Rise do that? What's the band procedure for X, Y, and Z? And we got good over the course of 12 full-time years at doing effective sound checks, effective publicity, effective everything. You know, you can't, there's a long checklist of what a band needs to do to make it in bluegrass. The bar is very high because there's a lot of talented people who want those top slots, and we didn't get there overnight by any stretch. It took a while, but we were always thinking about how to be better as a band, and we would record ourselves and listen back to the recordings. One of the most important things a band needs to do, make sure they're working the microphones properly, and just a lot of self-criticism, as well as watching other bands like the Johnson Mountain Boys or the Newgrass Revival or Bill Monroe or Ralph Stanley. We were around them all the time, so we got to learn by watching. And we put those lessons to work for us. And because of all these questions I got, I put out this book, and Mel Bay took it for a while and then let it go out of print. So I have the remaining copies.
Okay.
And it's dated like it mentions in the last revision, I mentioned the internet and it says it's going to be big. So, and then there's a lot about how to mail glossy photos of yourself to newspapers, and all that it needs translation into digital realm and the 21st century, but a lot of that stuff is still being used. There's a lot of bands who use that book as a reference book because the hammering out decisions is not easy for a band. If you think a marriage can be difficult, well, try four people in a marriage and their wives.
That's right.
Because in a way, your lives really are all bound together, and if the band makes decisions, for instance, without reference to the needs of their families, the band is already in trouble, especially the person whose family doesn't like what the band is doing schedule-wise or anything-wise. So there's a lot of attention needed to a lot of details. You know, Hot Rise had people really worried about the vehicle. We had people worried about the sound system. We had people worrying about the instruments themselves and their care and upkeep. And having four guys with that much expertise between them was part of our winning formula. You know, we ended up having a whole organization, but I personally trained our road manager because I had been doing it for 6 years before we got a road manager. And that means the person who makes all the arrangements gets the directions. Remember getting directions from people?
Yeah. And maps.
Us oldsters, people older than 30, remember pre-GPS days when you had to really be good at taking directions or you'd get lost. And I had an atlas that was well used on driving times that it would take and where the places that had diesel gas were and all kinds of details that most listeners right now are thinking, I didn't realize that you had to do more than just play the music, and you sure do, to make it work and make a life out of it. But I feel so fortunate that I made that choice when I was young, and then I had the right partners to do it with.
Well, Pete, sometimes I embarrass you in public. When if I see you at IBMA and you're in a room, I always tell people, this is the guy. This is the ambassador of bluegrass. And I go, and you get tired of that at some point. But I have so many books, the Bluegrass Songbook, the Banjo Instruction. I have Bluegrass Minus One. I have.
Those were all, in fact, what you just named were things that I did in the middle 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big gap at the time on all those things. There was nothing you could play along with that you could get rid of the instrument that you play.
Right.
In fact, there really still isn't, believe it or not, and now Music Minus One just went out of business a year or two ago, and I'm wondering whether I should try to reissue these recordings where you can just take the guitar out of the mix and be the guitar player and not clash with the guitar player on the record. Or if you want to hear everything Russ Barenberg is doing on the guitar, you can turn off the whole rest of the band and listen just to the guitar side of the stereo.
You should get those.
And
You should collect those things if they're going to be gone. You should collect them
I don't collect them. You know, it wouldn't be that easy to collect them, but I would like to put it into print. On the other hand, even though it went through first vinyl and then cassette and it ended up on two CDs, I'm almost out of them now. And when I run out, I'll feel bad that material is no longer around, so I might end up trying to reprint it. But it's hard to know how to do anything. Like, I have some more instruction. I could create a really good instructional program on harmony singing, which I don't know of any good, something that I would really recommend as a harmony singing instructional material. There's quite a few of them out, and I always check them out, but I think I could do a better one, but I don't know. How do you do it? I mean, it would have to be something that goes on with streaming, because streaming is the future for the time being.
It's the present and the future.
It's the present and the future, mm-hmm. and the past is what I'm familiar with in terms of those. Is CD, cassette, or vinyl? None of the above.
My minus one is vinyl.
Okay. Yeah, well, that tells a little bit about your age.
I know.
That hasn't. But the songbook also stands on its own. Yes, it's the only songbook that exists that I know of where there's a lot of instruction about bluegrass singing. Some of it is from me because I explain duet and trio singing to some degree. But there's all these interviews that I did, so you get to hear what Ralph Stanley says mm-hmm. about bluegrass singing, or Keith Whitley, or Rick. We didn't get Ricky Skaggs in that one. But, I don't know, Jim and Jesse, and Bill Monroe, and Lester Flatt. I interviewed these guys and just used the best excerpts from the interview so that people out there are not just learning songbooks, songs out of songbooks, but they're actually learning the craft and the art of bluegrass singing. Pete Rowan was a tremendously good interview because he was articulate and learned a lot about the Bill Monroe way of doing things and was able to express that, and it's in the book. So that's still around, the Red Songbook with a lot of songs in it. And when I was creating these things, I was thinking, man, I'm going to do the best job I can on these things because there's nothing else currently being offered, and I want this one to stand the test of time and stay in print. So my original banjo instruction book that I wrote in 73 is still around.
I've got it.
And Ned Lubrecki told me that he learned to play out of that book, and he's nominated now for Best Banjo Player of the Year, and he's an amazing player, and it just floors me to think that he and other guys and gals have learned banjo out of that first book that I wrote when it was the only one that explained the style.
I have it. And I appreciate your effort in that, and the Bluegrass Songbook, which is, if the people don't know, it's songs, it's lyrics. I mean, you can actually, in a little bit of history and some of the chords and whatnot, but
the Bluegrass. Well, it's all the chords, actually, and it also gives the melodies. It's the only book that doesn't give the melodies in music notation. It gives it in tablature,
Yeah. Which
is our more common bluegrass language. So if you play the banjo, dobro, or guitar, the melodies are found. When a guy is singing, you will find the melodies on strings 2, 3, and 4. So we just use a three-line form of tablature in that book. And it's odd, but at the publisher, when I said, I think this is better than music notation, the guy looks at it and says, well, all right, I'll give it a try. He picks up his guitar that's in the corner, and he says, okay, here's a song I don't know. It was Angel Band, because it was right at the beginning of the book.
Yeah.
It starts with an A. So he picks up the guitar and he starts playing it from the tablature and he says, oh, that's the melody, is it? I said, yep, that's the melody. And I said, and then he said, okay, we'll use this. And it's the only time it's ever been used in a book. Mm. And it's over 40 years old, but the book sold over 100,000.
Did it really?
And it's still selling. So I'm pleased and I feel very fortunate I had those opportunities because the income from those books. I couldn't have made it as a musician if I was just living off the gigs. I had to open up the instruction Pandora's box, and so I even during the Hot Rise launch years, I was making royalty money, and also I started banjo camps back then. I was the first person to do a banjo camp, and I didn't think it was going to amount to much, but it became a thriving business. And then I branched into teaching jamming, which is now pretty much my main activity in life.
Pete Warnick, you've done and so much quality in the bluegrass, and it brings us back around circle to this 40-year anniversary recording from Hot Rise, which kind of takes all those elements we've been discussing and shows off all of your experience and all of your ability, and it's a wonderful recording. And like I said, every time I talk to you, I learn something new, and I'm always happy to sit and talk with you, Pete, wherever you are.
I appreciate it, Steve. I remember meeting you at a Nash camp way back in the,
yes.
I believe the year was 2001, if
it
I'm
was,
not mistaken.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
And so that makes us kind of old buddies, and in fact, I knew you before I knew the other Steve Martin.
That's right. I'll tell you something.
Now
else,
I know
Pete.
Both.
Now you know both. Very few people do, but it's not really a club you need to get into. But I'll tell you this.
No.
That very first Nash camp you're talking about, there was the option, people were going to take a bus to go to some anniversary event of the Grand Ole Opry. I didn't go because I wanted to stay and talk with Pete Warnick because I knew you weren't going to go. That's a true story.
Well, you know, I've made similar choices. I remember when I was at the Newport Folk Festival, and there was this young woman who had a band. Her name was Allison Krauss. She was 14. And I knew she was going to be a major somebody at some point, but this was just a 14-year-old girl who had a bunch of friends from Illinois.
Uh-huh.
And she had this band. And I thought, she's going to be such an important personality in this group, I mean in this business, I should say, that I'm going to just hang around and get to know her a little bit. And I passed up a ride I could have had with Ralph Rinsler, who...
Mm.
It was a major guru in the and really did a huge amount for bluegrass and is in the Bluegrass Hall of Fame. He was Bill Monroe's manager and did a lot of stuff at the Smithsonian having to do with bluegrass. He was in the Greenbrier Boys. And I already knew him a little bit. I thought, oh, it would be cool to ride with Ralph and get to, you know, some conversation going with him. But I opted to be with the young star just so I could say I saw her when she was 14, and I got to know her a little bit when she was just a teenager. And that's part of what's interesting about bluegrass. I think you know this extremely well, and maybe many of the listeners do too. The community itself of bluegrass is extremely interesting, and it's an entirely different dimension when you go to a bluegrass festival and you not only appreciate the music on the stage, but your comrades in the audience, or when you maybe get to jam with some people who, some of whom might even be stage performers, and you just get to hang around informally and everybody gets to know each other a little bit. In today's world, especially, that is so precious. And we don't know the politics, for instance, of all the people in the bluegrass audience.
I was just going to say that music overcomes it all.
It does. You know, back in the 60s, my New York friends and I, when we went to the South to go to bluegrass festivals, we always resolved, let's not read the bumper stickers in the parking lot. Let's just keep our minds clear and keep it on music. And every time that happened, we stayed with the music, we got to cross all kinds of cultural boundaries and enjoy each other. In fact, the movie that's now out of print called Bluegrass Country Soul is an incredible document. I buy used copies just to give to people because it's from 1971, when the country was really shredded somewhat by the Vietnam War, and yet this movie has people with some of the longest hair you'll ever see, including people who are on stage like the New Deal String Band. And then Del McCurry's and, you know, all the Ralph Stanley, and they're all in there too, and their fans who are, you know, what might be called the classic redneck folks. And guess what? They're all getting along.
That's right.
And Carlton Haney talks about that. He's the promoter of that festival, and he's in the movie a lot, and he talks about how everybody's welcome and they're getting along fine. That's an amazing thing if you transport that into the current situation, and it's still true.
It still happens.
That is precious. And the bluegrass people, regardless of their backgrounds and education level, everybody gets along because they love the same stuff. When you're standing next to somebody who's loving the same thing that you are, you know, that's a lot of common ground that really counts. And if there's anything our whole nation and even the world needs, it's to be aware of and hang out on our common ground so that we can remember that even if we are not identical, we are rather similar in many ways, and we should appreciate and exploit those similarities and those commonalities between us, because that's what creates unity, and unity creates strength. Just like the lesson of Hot Rise, you stay together long enough and you get stronger and stronger as a band. And in true answer to the question you posed, are you still having fun? Sure,
I know
we're having fun, because we know what we're doing and we know it's good and we know people are going to like it. And I don't care how many times I might play Blue Night, I like every one of them quite a lot, because it's just a thrill to be part of a bluegrass band that knows how to play the music.
Pete, this is why I like to talk to you. And you're always welcome.
Keep going.
You're always welcome on the show anytime. And anytime I see you, I expect to be able to chat with you and catch up on some more details, and many of which I don't know, even though we spend a lot of time talking, not just on this program, but outside of this medium.
It's how we get to know each other.
Yeah.
And for those interested in this particular project, you know, the 40th anniversary really was January, our first gig, January 78. So here we are in January 2018, older and wiser, and without Charles, but with Brian, who's now been with us 16 years.
Isn't that incredible to think about? He's been there the new guy, Hot Rise.
The new guy is with us 16 years. He started out in his 20s, and now he's in his mid-40s.
Wow.
Can't help it.
Yeah.
But there's 19 cuts on the record, as well as more, you know, a fair amount of emceeing got in there as well, just so, you know, some of the informalities, you get to hear them. And Out of the 19 cuts, there's a few that Hot Rods has never recorded before. We have one, Sam takes the lead on one. Stewart takes the lead on one, and Jerry takes the lead on one. And but it has a lot of our greatest hits. And what's different about these renditions of our greatest hits is that it's not a four-piece you're listening to. It's a seven-piece or maybe a six-piece. And so Colleen Malone and Wichita Lineman and, I don't know, quite a few of the tunes come out a little different because now there's these extra great musicians on them. And there's the vinyl is going to have some really great photographs on it. There wasn't too much room for those on the CD, but the whole idea was to communicate that the dividends of guys who got together when we were young men and just stuck it out through, you know, ups and downs, both, just like any marriage. But we stuck it out, and here we have something to show and share. And we are hoping for the best for this album. So I hope people will buy it, stream it, whatever, find it on hotrise.com.
Well, I would say this. I would say this, Pete. Every Hot Rise fan is going to want to have this. And if for some you've lived in a cave and did not know who Hot Rise was till this moment, this is a great place to start because it's all, like you say, it's kind of a greatest hits, not necessarily, but certainly a lot of vintage and newer things from Hot Rise from the last CD also.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the guests which just flesh it out, not that it needed to be, but added a little different dimension to the music. And it's a wonderful collection of Hot Rise music. I love it. I've been listening to it for a day or so before our chat.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Well, it's the best we could do, so. That's it.
That's all you can ask.
That's our best.
All right.
We tried as hard as we could.
You did a good job. Pete, listen, I'm going to let you go back to whatever you're doing. I know you got things going on. You're always busy. And like I said, you're always welcome anytime at all. You something you just want to tell me, the door is open for Pete Wernick anytime on Unreal Bluegrass.
Well, that's really nice, and I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hope we'll be touring a lot in November. We're going to be the hosts of the IBMA Awards show, so people will see us there. But we're going to go a lot of places in November, and I hope people will find us there. And if your town is not on our schedule, which you would find on the website, and you know somebody who would put us on, we still have a few open dates in November and early December, and we would love to fill them with some good performances.
Okay.
So they could get in touch with Crossover Touring is the name of our booking agency.
Well, I will definitely see you in Raleigh. I'm still on the board down there. So
absolutely.
There.
I know. I'm congratulating you for that because we need good heads on that board. Make sure the organization does well.
It's been a trip. It'll be 4 years in May. Then I think I'm cycling out at that point. I'm not sure yet, but 4 years is... it's amazing. It's amazing on the inside looking out, and the people. You know this because you were so involved in it early on.
It's gone through a lot, but I've been out of the organization as one of the leaders since 2001. I mean, I went from 1986 to 2001, and since then we've had all kinds of people step up and be leaders. Joe Mullins is a tremendous board chair, mm-hmm. and I'm really happy for the whole organization, having a guy like that as a leader, that's great. And Paul Schiminger is our exec director, and he's doing great as far as I can tell. So
I think so.
The IBMA, full steam ahead, help bluegrass.
We're trying. Pete, thanks so much, man. I appreciate Pete Wernick. I appreciate everything you've done and continue doing, and I will definitely find you in Raleigh. We'll talk down there.
Yes, sir.
All great. Right. Thanks, Pete.
See you, Steve.
Bye-bye.